is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, is here with an update on that fire in Ulster County, the emergency responders who helped contain it near Grahamsville, and also the update on the $30 million grant to provide broadband around Sullivan County. The Yara, a boutique inn located in Roscoe, New York, just minutes from the Beaverkill and Willowemoc Rivers. The inn's name is a nod to the Yara River in Melbourne, Australia, and their menu reflects the diverse food scene of Melbourne. We'll learn more from Aaron Shearer, who's eating upstate. And country music and a whiskey tasting this weekend at the Black Velvet Lounge. Might be all something we all need right now. Musician Dylan Smucker and distiller Claire Marin of Catskill Provisions are here with more. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President-elect Donald Trump today will formally announce he's nominating North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum to be the next Secretary of the Interior. NPR's Kirk Siegler has more on Burgum's background.
Burgum made a fortune in software and briefly mounted a presidential bid in the 2024 GOP primary before dropping out and supporting and doing a lot of fundraising for Trump. He's known as a big booster of oil and gas and hails from one of the nation's most productive drilling states, though most of North Dakota's boom has occurred on private land. Historically, Interior Secretaries have come from western states with huge amounts of public land. North Dakota is about 4% federally owned.
NPR's Kirk Siegler reporting. There's been reaction to Trump's choice of former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. Gaetz was investigated by the Justice Department and the House Ethics Committee for allegations of sex trafficking. He has denied the allegations. The federal DOJ probe was ended. The House Ethics probe was terminated once Gaetz resigned from Congress on Wednesday. There have been calls for the Ethics Committee to release its report anyway. Police organizations are looking forward to a second Trump administration, even as some express concern about his calls for rough policing. NPR's Martin Costi reports.
During the campaign, Trump promised greater legal immunity for police, and he suggested violent tactics against shoplifters. Some reform advocates worry that this will unleash excessive force by local police. But Daryl Stevens, a former police chief, now with the Council on Criminal Justice, does not expect police to respond that way.
Most of them know that even if they engage in that kind of behavior, that the president's not going to save them. You know, they're going to be held accountable by their own local police agencies.
The federal government has no direct control over local law enforcement, though the previous Trump administration did rein in Justice Department investigations of individual police departments and also tried to tie federal grants to local police cooperation on immigration enforcement. Martin Costi, NPR News.
Stocks opened lower this morning as the Commerce Department reported a bigger-than-expected jump in retail sales last month. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 250 points in early trading.
Retail sales rose by 0.4% in October as shoppers bought more big-ticket items, including cars, appliances, and electronics. Spending at gas stations and grocery stores rose only slightly last month, but spending at restaurants jumped by 0.7%. Furniture sales were down in October. They've been weighed down by sluggish home sales. General Motors is laying off about 1,000 workers around the world. Most of the layoffs are hitting salaried employees, but some blue-collar workers are also affected. Stocks in vaccine makers are down after President-elect Trump confirmed plans to nominate vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the Department of Health and Human Services. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News. School districts are struggling to find and hold on to special education teachers, especially since the pandemic. The shortage is adding to the learning challenges students with disabilities already face. NPR's Kristen Wright reports federal officials are hearing testimony this morning at a briefing.
The Education Department says 39 states report not having enough special ed teachers this year. The Civil Rights Commission is looking into it. Kate Sable lives in Wisconsin. She has two children with developmental disabilities and learning differences in high school.
Your kids just aren't getting what they need, and they're not getting enough remediation. They're not getting enough one-on-one time. And so it's just a trickle-down effect.
Sable says fixing this is going to take understanding what educators need.
Every special ed teacher that I have ever met loves what they do, and they really want to help. And they need support.
The commission's report, including what the federal response should be, is due out next year. Kristen Wright, NPR News, Washington.
California fire officials say the wildfire burning northwest of Los Angeles is more than 90% contained. More than 240 buildings were destroyed, many of them homes. At one point, thousands of people evacuated. On the East Coast, the Jennings Creek fire burning on the New Jersey-New York border has been three-quarters contained. There's a super moon peaking tonight. That's because it's full and at its closest point in orbit to the Earth. This is the fourth super moon this year. It will appear big and bright for a couple of days. Scientists say the next super moon won't happen until next October. But next year, there will be three monthly super moons in a row. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR be the model for high-quality journalism in the 21st century. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Joining us on a Friday, and as he does every Friday, it is Super Dude, Dan Hoost. Communication.
Oh, Super Dude. I was like, where did that come from?
I don't know. I just thought of it when they said Super Moon. That's why we're so tired.
Great.
Dan Hoost is the communications director for Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we did hear an update about that Jennings fire, which is the fire that was happening in Orange County, about three quarters contained. Firefighters still working on that. A little closer into us here, there was yet another fire. You have a bit of an update there. And also a thanks to all those first responders.
Yes. A sense of irony here. It's called the White House fire. it's because there's a road there called White House. It was almost all in Ulster County, about 600 acres, but it was right up against the Sullivan County border, Grahamsville, town of Neversink, over near the Rondout Reservoir. We had, well over 100 of our own firefighters. I think there were over 200 total that were battling this over the past week. It is now contained. Just got word that Peekamoose Road, which is in Ulster County, I think it's town of Denning over there, is reopening tomorrow. I had gone over earlier this week and couldn't get up farther than a little town called Sundown to see what was going on, but you could definitely smell the smoke, and the staging area was still full. And the Grahamsville Firehouse, too, was full of all sorts of food and water for firefighters. It was an incredible community outpouring. Our firefighters worked very hard, and I think they were very heartened to see that the community supported them. As soon as they sprang into action, the community sprang into action, making sure that they were well-fed and well-cared for in what was a very exhausting situation. Even our own Health and Human Services Commissioner, John Little, he is a firefighter with Liberty. He was stunned to find out when he got over there that he wasn't part of the backup team. He was part of the frontline team. He was out in the forest fighting the fire.
And a reminder about how dangerous these fires are. There was a firefighter who died in Jennings Creek fire in Greenwood last Saturday. Funeral service services have been scheduled for Daryl Vasquez. That's the 18-year-old state parks worker who was killed while fighting that fire. A wake will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. Sunday in Garnerville, followed by a funeral mass at 10 on Monday at St. Peter's Church in Haverstraw. And of course, we send condolences to the family. Yes. And just a reminder about how dangerous this work is for all of our first responders.
It is. And thankfully, we did not suffer injuries or even loss of main residences. I think there was a cabin in an outbuilding that did succumb to the fire, but the rest of it was basically forest, which will grow back.
And the National Weather Service has issued another fire weather watch. Mm-hmm. That is different than a red flag warning, but it does mean that the possibility of a combination of gusty winds, low relative humidity, and dry fuels for portions of the Hudson Valley and the Catskills could result in fire. That watch goes into effect tomorrow morning at 7 and lasts through 6 p.m. tomorrow. The affected area includes Schenectady, Albany, Rensselaer, Columbia, Greene, Ulster, Dutchess, Sullivan, northeast portions of Schoharie and eastern portions of Montgomery, and the southeast portions of Delaware counties. Again, the fire weather watch in effect starting tomorrow morning at 7 until 6. can expect some wind gusts up to 30 miles an hour. That humidity could go as low as 20 to 30%, with temperatures between 50 and 60 degrees. So any fire that develops will catch and spread quickly. Outdoor burning is prohibited.
That's what I was about to say. That's exactly why there is a statewide burn ban. Do not be burning leaves. Do not be burning garbage outside, because if you are caught doing that, you're going to be fined and cited. You might even have to show up in court. And worse, if it turns into a fire, you could be liable for any of the damages, including loss of life. It is not worth it. Do not burn.
Thank you for that. And again, that burn ban statewide in New York until November 30th. Governor Hochul announced that earlier this week. Let's talk about some other stuff that's going on in the news in Sullivan County. A big announcement, the broadband grant for Sullivan County, a $30 million grant. That's kind of big.
Biggest in our history.
And this is something that the county's been working toward for quite some time.
Lauren Green, our chief information officer, commissioner of our IT department, our computer guy, basically, told legislators yesterday he has been working on this for a solid 10 years. And it went through different permutations. We thought it wasn't going to work at one point. Technology, of course, has changed since then. But he was supported, of course, by our county manager, Josh Potosik, who was a real mover and shaker behind this, our planning commissioner, Heather Brown, as well. And then we had a company, an upstart company that was really actually the creation of the Hancock Telephone Company and some others, turned into Archtop Fiber. And it swooped in and said, listen, we see an opportunity here for a public-private partnership where we could accomplish our goals and you can accomplish yours. So we started working together. They've set up headquarters in the old IBM plant up in Kingston, where they have been storing for a couple years now hundreds of miles of a fiber optic cable.
We have a picture of it on our website.
Yes. And in fact, I think that was my picture.
That's your picture.
Yeah, because I went and had a chance to see that. And this was the final piece that we needed to start this. And now there are no further impediments. In fact, Archtop had been waiting for a while to get permission from the utilities to put the wires up on utility poles. Well, now we're going to bypass that. They have helped refine a process that started in Europe called micro trenching, which is these tiny little trenches that are put in pavement and in the ground along rights of way that the county or the state already has. So they can go ahead and do that and string the wire that way. You won't even see it. It'll be more protected from the elements, including trees falling and things that will not affect it. And it will not do any harm to your property or anything like that. It will be a wonderful 21st century way of resolving a 20th century issue that we still have. There's still dial-up people are using in the county. Dial-up. And, of course, there are plenty of people who tell you about the satellite service they have being so inadequate. We consider this to be transformative because it will put Sullivan County on an equal footing with our downstate neighbors and really, I think, make it possible for people, both local and second homeowners, to maintain not only a place of living up here but a place of work.
I can tell you where, and I'm sure other folks can tell you where, there's a dead zone in coverage. In fact, right here in front of our studios in Liberty on New York Route 52, there is a pretty significant dead zone. And the reason I know that is because not only because I've been trying to call when I leave work, but we have people who actually stop and park in our parking lot to make a call before they continue on in an eastward direction. So hopefully this will help transform not just that, but all of the county, as you said. Let's remind folks about some of the speeds we're talking about here. This is really fast.
We are talking about minimum 100 gigabyte upload, 100 gigabyte download. Right now, you're probably not getting anywhere near that. The speeds will be able to get up to 8 to 10 gigabytes up and down. This will be the latest fiber optic cable. It will be built with the future in mind, future growth. It also will come with a wireless component. We're going to be wiring, of course, all over the county. But we will be stringing this fiber optic cable to all of our nearly a dozen emergency communications towers, which we have, of course, strategically placed throughout the county. And they will be broadcasting and receiving wireless signal that will be basically equal to that, which will that upload and download speed I was talking about before, and will allow us to reach areas where it would be very difficult or very uneconomical to actually string fiber optic cable. So when I say transformational, I mean it.
And this is connected into a larger statewide initiative as well.
Hudson Valley for Archtop Fiber, and then statewide, it's the Connect All program, which Governor Hochul has put together. We're very grateful to her about that. Senator Schumer and Gillibrand both were huge proponents of this because they know how important this is. So a shout out to them as well. They really helped make all of this happen, and they deserve to celebrate as much as anybody else.
So we're talking about this. It's transformative. We see the spools of high cable, high fiber internet cable ready to go. What's the timeline?
We have to have it done by the end of 2026, so work is beginning already. In fact, I was talking to our county manager, Josh, yesterday, and he's like, yep, this is where we now have to roll up our sleeves. We've been doing a lot of waiting. Now we've got to be doing a lot of working because we're going to have somebody on our end paid for with some of these funds who is going to basically be a project manager. Archtop is going to assign a project manager. And I believe actual work, potentially even the micro-trenching, will begin in January or February. I expect by next summer that we will have people, we'll be ready to have customers for this system. And then certainly as we keep going along through 2025 and 2026, we'll be expanding that service until it basically covers the entire county. Where will it happen first? I'm guessing sort of the northwest corner of the county because that's where the fiber is coming in from, is from Delaware County, and it's going to loop through Sullivan County and then make its way towards Kingston. But don't worry, if you're down in the southern part of the county, we're going to be stringing it down there, putting it into the wireless towers down there as well.
Are there details on the provider yet? Like for a customer, I mean, we're down the road a little bit from that, but if I were a customer, I wanted to sign up, is it going to just be through this one provider?
It's going to be through Archtop. I see. Yes. And of course, you know, Spectrum will continue to be around. That'll be an alternative for folks. It's going to be a more competitive environment. I've heard word possibly that Verizon or some others may start competing in this market as well, because they are seeing there is untapped potential here, untapped profits for them. For us, it's not about making a profit. It's about putting the county in an advantageous position, an attractive position for people to live, work, and play here year round and not have to bemoan the fact that they don't have, which is what has really become sort of a like a utility, like electricity. You need to have high-speed broadband in your life if you're going to live the kind of life that we want to afford you here in Sullivan County.
We're speaking to Dan Hoost. He's the communications director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday with an update. Let's talk about what the legislature was doing yesterday. They met. There is a third tax auction. We had talked about this before, Some of those properties. So there's a few left over.
Yep. There had been a second tax auction we had talked about. And I found out yesterday there's a third because some folks didn't come through on meeting the payment deadlines for the properties they were looking at. There's about eight properties, one of which is a single family home. And our county treasurer, Nancy Buck, was telling legislators, I don't want to be hanging on to any of this stuff. So they authorized this third tax auction. It will be running, I believe, Monday through Wednesday, online only at AARauctions.com or NYSauctions.com. Either one works.
There's a county fuel truck that's now been authorized to assist fire departments. Was not authorized before? What's the deal there?
No, it had not been. We needed a full authorization for it. In the past, the fire departments have relied on local towns and villages if they needed emergency supplies of fuel when they were fighting big fires, like the White House fire that we were just talking about. But I guess some of the past brush fires, that system proved inadequate. We had fire trucks running out of fuel, which, of course, powers the pumps that put the water out there. So it became a concern for legislators and for our fire bureau. So they have authorized in committee, and I expect them to fully authorize it officially next week, that county fuel trucks can be not commandeered, but requisitioned. There we go. That's the word. For these major fires, the fire departments will be responsible for paying the county back. It's not a giveaway. It's not a freebie, but it gives them an extra margin of safety and comfort knowing that if those trucks are sitting there for long times running, not just idling, they're running pumps. So They're running through gas faster than just idling, that we will be able to supply them with fuel as they need it so that those pumps don't run dry.
There was a donation to the foster care program. I didn't know that folks could do that.
I didn't know they could either, and that's why I wanted to mention this. I thought this was really wonderful. This was a donation that has been accepted. It was $1,000 to our Department of Social Services, which runs our foster care unit, from the Riverside United Methodist Church. Having no cases pending that involved the county, presented an unsolicited cash donation, because we can't solicit this. We are not asking people to do this. I'm just putting this out there that it was a really nice gesture.
You're thanking folks.
Yes. It was valued at $1,000 to benefit Sullivan County's foster children during the holiday season. And we are going to be using that for the children. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe they'll get some special gifts from Santa or something. But I thought, what a wonderful gesture for a church I don't even believe is actually in Sullivan County, Riverside United Methodist. I'm not sure which one it is, but I looked up. I didn't find one there. If they are in Sullivan County, I apologize. But whoever it was, what a wonderful thing you've done for the children of Sullivan County. Oh, nice. Thank you.
Nice piece of news. Mm-hmm. We spoke to the local Trans Support Initiative group earlier this week, and they mentioned that there was going to be a proclamation read by legislator Kat Scott in honor of National Transgender Awareness Day, and that happened yesterday.
That happened yesterday. I'll be posting a picture on our social media today, and the Awareness Day is on November 20th. I'll also be including some information which Legislator Scott wanted to be keen to include, that there is help if you're feeling depressed or suicidal for any reason. It's a tough life just as it is, even if you are cisgender. But for transgender in particular, there are extra challenges that the rest of us may not face, but there are resources and local people who want to help. You will see that in the picture that gets posted today.
Yeah, and then that Trans Support Initiative group is for folks in Sullivan and Wayne counties. Mm-hmm. You can get you can hear that interview we did earlier this week at our website, wjffradio.org. There's an executive committee and full board legislature meeting coming up Thursday. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
This happens every month. And I wanted to mention this because if you don't see any other committee meetings, this is the one to see. The executive committee consists of all 9 legislators. It is open to the public. It is not an executive session. That's different. This is the executive committee, just meaning it includes the entire legislature. It meets at 9 a.m., followed by at 10:30, the full board meeting where everything that was voted on and discussed in committee gets voted on to be made official, either yay or nay. So these are the most important meetings that we have during the month in terms of the actual process. And I would encourage people to come in person to the legislature. You're welcome to watch the meeting face-to-face with the legislators, or watch it online live or after the fact, because we archive all of those videos.
We'll take a break and be back with more from Dan Hoost, the communications director at Sullivan County Government. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Enough with the same old relationships. Let's shake things up. Invite that stranger in through the window to make you banana bread. Or, hey, invite an ex to move in with you and your family. Everything's possible on the next Selected Shorts with me, Meg Wolitzer.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and we're talking to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. Wanted to talk about this free rabies vaccination clinic coming up. You had told us a little while ago about a case of rabies with, I forget which creature.
A skunk.
And so we've got a free rabies vaccination clinic. Nothing to be laughing about there.
No. It is very important, especially if you have a dog, a cat, or a ferret. Always wanted to have a ferret. They look so cute. So I hear they're a little smelly, though.
Christmas is coming.
No, I just got a kitten. Sugar is filling my life with sweetness right now. So, anyway, the rabies clinic is being held at the Monticello Firehouse on Wednesday, November 20th. That's this Wednesday, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. It's free. Reason it's being held there by our public health department is because we got confirmation that a now deceased skunk in the town of Thompson tested positive for rabies. And of course, that means rabies remains in the area. And some animals like skunk might actually exhibit the foaming in the mouth. But I learned yesterday that bats do not exhibit rabid symptoms. They are called asymptomatic, which means if you have a bat in your bedroom and you wake up to it, you may have been bit, you may not even know you've been bit, and you wouldn't necessarily know that the bat is rabid, which was a rather scary thing, mm-hmm. I thought. So getting your pets vaccinated will help reduce the chances of rabies spreading in the community, too, including even to our bat population. You cannot bring in your local bat, though, to get vaccinated against rabies. I'm sorry about
They're
that.
They're on their own.
Yeah, but this is free. No pre-registration is required, but you do have to bring photo ID because you have to show proof of Sullivan County residency. You have to live in Sullivan County for us to be able to offer this to you. All pets must be at least 3 months old, and they have to be in a carrier or on a leash. Aggressive dogs should be muzzled to prevent any biting incidences. And if you bring proof of prior rabies vaccination, you will receive a vaccination that is good for 3 years. If you don't have proof of the prior rabies vaccination, you'll receive a 1 year vaccination.
And on the public health website under epidemiology, there's a rabies Q&A. Is the rabies threat over in Sullivan County? Answer:
No.
No. The best protection against rabies is, again, a vaccination. And as we mentioned, raccoons, skunks, and foxes are the most common animals infected with rabies, including bats as well. If you see a wild animal or a domestic animal acting strangely, don't go near the animal.
Don't do that.
Keep your distance. And then also call public health.
Yes, especially if you see something that just doesn't look right. I've seen rabid animals before, and they look lethargic. They might be foaming at the mouth. They might not be. They might act aggressive to even inanimate objects. That is not something you want to deal with. And how much harder would it be if your beloved pet starts exhibiting those symptoms? Get them the rabies vaccination.
And as you mentioned, pets must be at least 3 months old. The first rabies shot must be repeated within a year. If your vet is using a 3-year vaccine, your pet's going to need to be vaccinated every 3 years. A pet whose rabies booster has waited more than 3 years is considered unvaccinated.
Yep.
And some vets prefer to vaccinate every year with a 1-year vaccine. It's whichever your vet, but check with your vet to make sure your animal is vaccinated. And this other Q&A again, on the website, my dog got into a fight with a wild animal and the animal ran off. What do I do? Get a rabies booster for your dog within 5 days. If your dog is unvaccinated, he or she may be confined, but again, keep your pets vaccinated. And again, don't go near any of these wild animals we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Serious stuff as, the winter approaches as well. Warming centers, speaking of winter and colder temperatures, the warming centers are opening up, next week.
Yeah, week from today, I've been told, is when we're going to be opening up our warming centers, which will be at St. John's Episcopal Church in Monticello, which is sort of just in the shadow of the courthouse there. Not the Presbyterian Church that sits right next to it, but just down St. John Street. And then also at the United Methodist Church in Liberty, we will have a warming center as well. They will be open from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. Anybody and everybody, we will not be checking IDs to see if you're some sort of local county resident or whatever. We just want to be able to provide you with a place that has some shelter and maybe a little bit of food too. They're not designed really to be soup kitchen kinds of things, but they are going to be, that care will be rendered with lots of compassion from people in the community who volunteer to do this. We do pay the churches themselves for this, but the people who do this by and large are not paid. They're volunteers who will be there 7 nights a week, 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. This will start next Friday and run every night, no matter the weather, right through to, I believe it's usually mid-March.
And the next job fair coming up at the Career Center next week as well.
Yes. This one in particular I want to tout because it's sort of our job fair. We are doing it along with the Monticello School District, but we are really having our folks there because we have needs for nurses, caseworkers, social workers, account people, just, you know, from clerk level up to budget analyst. We have need for folks in our computer department, like a senior network engineer, training and quality improvement coordinator. We have needs for assistant county attorneys. Monticello School District has a lot of substitute needs, also custodial workers, cleaners, security attendants, and we will also have the recruiters for our younger folks from Army National Guard, all the armed forces, and the Delaware Valley Job Corps, which is as much a local educator now as they used to be helping those from the inner city regions. So it's one of those things that's really great that we have at our career center, which is on 50 North Street, just up the road next to the Elks Lodge in Monticello, up the road from the government center. It will be running Tuesday, November 19th from 2 to 4 p.m. If you're coming, dress smartly. If you're looking to be hired by us or the school district or whatever, have a resume with you. The recruiters won't require a resume. They'll just want to talk to you about all of that. But on-the-spot interviews will be offered, and there's even the chance that on-the-spot job offerings, not with the county, you have to go through a process, but possibly with the school district might be offered as well. And if none of those jobs interest you, we call it the Career Center because we help you find what you might like doing. Sullivan County has been leading the state for almost 3 years now in job growth. We, once again, are, let's say this month, we were number two in the state behind only Hamilton County, which Hamilton County leaped by double digits. We leaped by, I think it was 3.6% job growth. I just saw the numbers yesterday. There are plenty of jobs available. We need people to fill them. This is also part of our broadband initiative, is to get people to move here so that they'll work here because we have more jobs than we can fill. How long that will last, I don't know, but it's a great problem to have. We need people to come out and take a look at what we're offering and work with us.
And these are jobs with the county, right? Or are they also other jobs in the area? Because I know that on your website, you have something called Hot Jobs, which is links to other folks, other companies, employers that are looking for help as well.
Yeah, like I said, we're at this in-house hiring event, we're going to have the Monticello School District and the recruiters there from the Armed Forces. That's not county folks. But yes, we offer at the Career Center, we constantly have job postings. We're working with the private, public, nonprofit sectors. Our work at the Career Center is to find people jobs wherever that may be in Sullivan County, ones that, you know, of course, give them a livable income, but also ones that maybe give them a real reason to wake up in the morning and go do what they're doing, like you have, Tim. You know, you get to come in here and have a great time and get paid to do it, too. Well, those kinds of jobs do exist, not program or a general manager of JFF, maybe. but there are really satisfying, wonderful jobs out there just waiting for the right people.
I mean, there's a big list of jobs on this website.
Oh, my goodness.
In a lot of different areas. And, of course, and the one area that is the most lengthy, it looks like, is the medical area. So everything from caseworkers, nurses, to home health aides. If just in case there's an employer out there that may want to have their job listed on your Hot Jobs site, how do they get involved or learn more about this career fair?
Just call our career center. I mean, we want more employers to talk to us to help them fill their needs. That's what we do. We'll do it at no charge because your taxes already pay for it. 845-794-3340. That's 794-3340. Give a call. If you're an employer, we will be as thrilled to hear from you as if you're somebody looking for a job.
And there's a drug task force public meeting that's coming up next week as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The drug task force is a multi-agency, multi-jurisdictional group of people. It's, I think, about 20 different people and agencies represented. Of course, county agencies like our district attorney's office, our social services office, but also a number of our local treatment providers and others, all working on the substance use epidemic that we have in Sullivan County, because unfortunately we lead the state on a per capita basis on opioid overdoses as well. Well, a lot of people are like, what are you doing about it? And some special few also are like, how can I help more? this is your opportunity to enter that world that actually is dealing with a very difficult topic, but in a very positive, optimistic, uplifting way. Coming to hear these people talk about what they're doing, you might start off with, oh, this sounds like such an insurmountable problem. You will walk away from this meeting feeling like, no, there's something to be done. And I'm hoping, too, that you walk away feeling like there's a role I can play in all of this, because we need the community to help us fight what's going on. So it's going to be happening on Friday the 22nd at 2 p.m., excuse me, at the Liberty Senior Center on North Main. Usually we have this at the Government Center, but this one's going to be at the Liberty Senior Center, which is across from the Town Hall on North Main Street in Liberty, at 2 p.m. on the 22nd. You could come, and don't worry, it's not going to obligate you just to show up. We have these public meetings to show the public what we're doing to combat this and how we're doing it, so that you're informed and that information is empowering. And then, of course, if you want, you can talk to us and say, how can I be a part of the solution?
And who will folks hear from at this meeting?
No, everyone. Task force. Everyone that's we've got different pillars that handle different aspects of it. It'll be led by our co-chairs, Camille O'Brien, who works in our social services, and of course our district attorney, Brian Connolly. But it will include other folks, executive directors of, like, I believe, the Lexington Center for Recovery. We will have nurses. I think Garnet Crystal Run will be there as well. You're going to hear from a cross section of the community about not just, for example, about the prevention efforts or the treatment efforts, but also the outreach efforts. And it's a number of, like I said, different pillars that handle different things, so that we are having as comprehensive and widespread an impact as possible.
All right. Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government joins us every Friday. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the update.
My pleasure.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, we're eating upstate. This is Radio Chatsko.
On the next Jazz Night in America, singer-songwriter Cassandra Wilson.
Ooh, little moonlight. I love digging inside of a lyric and turning it and twisting it so that it has a certain effect on the listener, and also an effect on me.
Hear music from her discography and stories from her life and career. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Yara is a boutique inn in Roscoe, New York, just minutes from the Beaver Kill and Willowemoc Rivers. Built in 1890 by the Baxter family, the inn has recently been renovated by owners Sonia and Paul, and the inn's name is a nod to the Yara River in Melbourne, Australia. And their menu reflects the diverse and multicultural food scene of Melbourne, offering a unique blend of cuisines. To find out more, Aaron Shearer went eating upstate.
I think I would just sort of say a little bit about the vibe of the Yara. You know, we really are very small, and we really aim to create an environment that's pretty intimate and special for people when they come and stay or dine with us. And that's something that's really important to me, is not to have, like, this, you know, size is not everything. And to have a small place that, you know, like, I do the cooking. We don't have a lot of staff, so it's pretty, like, hands-on on that front.
That's Sonia Worster describing her hotel and restaurant, The Yara, in Roscoe. The Yara focuses on the eclectic flavors of Sonia's native Melbourne, Australia, and it's the subject of today's Eating Upstate. Sonia Worster was born in Melbourne, Australia, and spent part of her childhood in Michigan. After her freshman year of high school, she returned to Melbourne and eventually earned a PhD in classics at the University of Melbourne. She subsequently taught Latin there and later in Singapore, and in 2018, she came to the United States with the hopes of continuing her career. However, She had a difficult time finding work and eventually decided to leave academia. Despite her limited experience in hospitality, she decided to pursue her dream of opening a boutique hotel and restaurant.
Whilst I was doing my PhD, like a lot of people, I fantasized about other things, doing something else. And I had often thought about my experiences of staying at very small hotels in my travels. And I was like, you know, I really like hosting. I love cooking. And I think that would be something I'd like to do at some point in my life. And when I decided that academia was not going to be my pathway, I thought, you know what, I'm going to start looking now. So originally it was something I'd planned to do when I was like a bit older. And then I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it now. Why not? And so I started looking for places to buy, and I saw what was then the Baxter House. And I just liked the building. And we came up, my husband and I came up and had a look at it, and it was like January. So it's not like the best time of year to come upstate. But I was like, you know, I love the building, and Ross, I liked the area. And it was, you know, I thought this is such a beautiful spot. And so I decided to do it.
Sonia and her husband first came across the property of what became the Yera in January of 2021. After purchasing the property, they opened the Yera the following November. The Yera's focus as a restaurant is focused on cuisine one might find in Sonia's native Melbourne.
You know, it's not really a particular, like, I don't just do a particular type of cuisine, which is very influenced by my experience of living in Melbourne, which is pretty varied in terms of what you eat and what you can access. And so, you know, sometimes it will seem more like Italian influence, but other times I'll have like, you know, a Thai curry on there, or I will do, yeah, some Southeast Asian influenced food, which is something I really miss from Melbourne, the Southeast Asian food. So it will vary quite a lot depending on season, what I feel like cooking at the time. And yeah.
The Yera offers a prefix or five-course menu. Those who are interested in dining at the Yera must make reservations through their website, yerany.com.
No, we've gone back to reservation only with, you know, a real focus on, you know, the core of the Yera, which is accommodation, food, and wine, and kind of making sure that in guests have access to food when they're staying. And so we do the supper clubs because they're kind of more of a, you know, you have to sign up and pay ahead kind of thing for the supper clubs. But we have a lounge menu too. And that focus for that is really like if someone's checking in on a Tuesday night, that they actually have something to eat.
On Wednesdays, Sonia drives to the Delhi Farmers Market and purchases from the likes of Walton's Rock Royal Farm or whoever is selling at the farmer's market that day.
So I've been going to the Delhi Farmers Market because it's a Wednesday. So like this weekend, for example, with the supper club menu that I'm doing, the duck is from a farm called Rock Royal. And so it really, for me right now, it's the Delhi Farmers Market, and who is there, then that's who I source from as much as possible.
This past summer, Sonia closed down the Yera to renovate the kitchen and resume service in October. This coming December 23rd, the Yera is offering a special Christmas dinner with an Australian twist. They also have other plans for the winter.
So we are doing a special Saturday supper club, actually the Saturday on December 23. So it'll be Christmassy themed, maybe Australian Christmas themed, which is very seafood based. So, because obviously in Australia it's summer when it's Christmas, so you don't always want to have like a heavy roast when it might be 100 degrees. But if people are interested, they can always check out our website. Like there's a lot of details there. And like, I think this winter I want to do a few more things that are like, you know, I'll do a wine dinner again. I sometimes do these where I have an Australian wine importer that I work with, and he comes and we sort of do something with wine and food.
The Yera is located at 2012 Old Route 17 in Roscoe. I'm Erin Shear. Eating Upstate is a production of WJFF Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, whiskey and country music in Berryville. Sign me up. We'll have more after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, matching strangers with different political beliefs to just have a conversation about their lives. Hi, I'm Judy Balaban, and I'm working on One Small Step at Radio Catskill. Help bring our community together, one conversation at a time. Go to wjffradio.org and click on the One Small Step logo to join us.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Break out the boots and the hats because Nashville is coming to Berryville. The Black Velvet Lounge and Catskill Provisions Distillery are partnering up to bring an authentic country music experience. Catskill's Provisions Distillery will kick things off with a guided whiskey tasting. And the headlining acts are Josh Rennie Hines and Dylan Smucker. They're all here, but first, let's listen a little bit to their new single, Josh Rennie Hines and Dylan Smucker. This is The Way That It Does.
I can't think about it, much to my dismay. I saw you for the first time in so long today.
Well, that was an abrupt halt there. Sorry about that. that was Josh Rennie Hines and Dylan Smucker. Luckily, they're here live, so we can hear them more. Sorry about that. And also Alice Marie from the Black Velvet Lounge. And also on the phone, the gang is all here, Claire Marin from Catskill Provisions. Hello, everybody.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Good to be here.
Hi.
Pardon that little abrupt stop there, but it sounded lovely. Guys, tell us a little bit about your music. You're both in Nashville. Dylan, tell us how you guys kind of met and came up with this combo for now. You're separate solo artist too, but this new single too.
Yeah, we do a lot of work together. Never really been like an official band, but we play together, sing together, kind of just started singing around fires. I think he met me at a bar in Nashville, me bumbling around.
I did.
And I think he's got a funny story about that, but... Yeah, he's a great guy. I think we hit it off. We hit it off right away.
Is it a family friendly funny story?
I think it is. Yeah, I think I was just being annoying and drunk, probably. You know.
Yeah, I was like, "Who's this guy?"
As one does at a bar in Nashville.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mentioned country music, but you know, country music is such a catch all in some ways. How do you kind of describe your particular lane of country music?
I think for me, I lean into country a lot, and I think Josh isn't so much country, but our voices work together really well, you know, and I feel like Josh could make a country record if he wanted to any day. I mean, he could do anything. He's made pop records and you know, rock records and all kinds of things. But yeah, it's just for me, it's just for us working together personally, it's just the voices working well, and some people can just really sing well together, and you just find that, and you're like, oh, wow, this works. We can make this work, and we've just done so much singing that... We just don't stop. We keep writing music, but I stay in my country lane for now. I got another record coming out. I might break the mold a little bit. You know, we'll see what happens.
Josh, country, I said, is this kind of catch-all phrase. Yeah. You're also from Australia, Queensland-born.
Yes, sir.
How we would call it Americana in some ways, another synonym for it. What would you call it from your country or your just genre that you identify with?
Yeah, I started out in the Americana umbrella. Yeah, when it first came in, probably about 10 or 15 years ago, because before that term wasn't really around.
Right. Yeah. And roots, maybe rhythm.
Folk roots in that world. I started out very much in that world. And then, yeah, since I've moved to Nashville, I've gone in multiple directions.
What took you to Nashville from Australia?
I got a songwriting residency from the Australian government in 2018. was called the Nashville Songwriters Residency, which they give to one Australian artist a year.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
So thanks. Yeah. So I got that in 2018 and I was like, all right, I guess I'll move to Nashville.
He told me that and I was like, that is like America doesn't do that. I was like, do they just give you money to make music in that country? Like, it was like, yeah, amazing.
Here, go follow your dream.
Americans are like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's great. And then Alice, how did you guys decide to partner with Claire to come up with this idea of a whiskey and music night?
Well, Claire is an amazing business owner here in our tiny pocket of the Catskills, and so and also happens to be I would consider a good friend, and so I just I wanted to band together and create an amazing experience, and so I pitched it to Claire, and she was all in, and now we're here.
Claire, what can folks expect with your guided whiskey tasting or tour?
Well, I just have to say I'm so excited to be supporting this. And Elise, I can't thank you enough for bringing this to this neck of the woods, because it's super exciting for sure. But, you know, I've been making whiskey it started in 2014. And so the barrels that I'm opening now are around six and a half years old. They're super delicious, and we're going to be sharing them with people that attend the evening, where it's going to start at 7:30. And so we're going to have four different whiskeys. One is better than the next. There's rye, there's bourbon, there's a smoky rye, and a single barrel that we're going to break open.
Dylan's already tasting it. I don't know if you're
licking my lips, I'm imagining. Can't wait.
It's going to be good. It's going to be really good. And I can't wait to have some whiskey and then hear some beautiful, beautiful music.
Well, and I just want to disclaim, I have not been tasting the Pollinator Spirits just yet, but I have been mispronouncing Elise's name. I apologize for that. But let's hear a little bit more from you guys live, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Do you both want to play, or what do you got for us?
Yeah, we'll do some harmonizing, I think. Oh, cool. And we could just sing right into these mics, right?
They're here. The mics for you.
Just
yeah.
Lovely.
It's
all right.
Dylan Smucker and Josh Rennie Hines.
Yes.
And this one's called Do You Still Love Me?
You picked me up at the Greyhound station. I was just waiting on a park bench in Alabama, watching the whole world pass me by. Something's just different and I can taste it. Maybe it's you, maybe it's me, maybe it's just time. Oh, honey, I do still love you, but something ain't right. Do you still love me? Do you? I walk inside the door, it ain't home no more. My cold feet on this floor, they match my aching heart. I'm hungry for your touch, I'm dying for your love. And I'm like a mourning dove who's lost its lover. Do you even care? You look at me and stare, but you stare right through me. I'm a ghost in my own house, so where do I go now if even you won't hold me? Do you still love me?
Tell me the truth, baby.
Do you still love me? Oh. Because time takes no prisoners. Close the blinds on these lovers. You know that time, like no other,
It washes lovers and kingdoms away. Do you still love me?
I'll ask you one more time, darling.
Baby, do you still love me?
Dylan Smucker and Josh Rennie Hines live here at Radio Chatskill. Thank you, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Is there some true heartache in there?
Oh, that one's, yeah, that's just real. Some people can write, like, story songs, and I have a couple good story songs, but most of my writing, personally, I wrote that one. Josh has just been singing it with me around campfires for years, and we love singing that one. But that one's totally just like a true story, pretty much, you know? Like when you a house feels colder when there's no love in it, and you have that, you know, your cold feet in the morning on some tile, you know, and I kind of imagined a trailer. I don't live in a trailer, but I want to. Some people, you know, want a big house. I actually want a trailer that I can smoke cigarettes inside of. My wife probably wouldn't like that, but so I always say I want to put a trailer out back, and you can have the farmhouse, and then I'll go smoke in the trailer and play music. But yeah, that one's a lot of my stuff comes from real experiences. So, do you still love me? It's definitely a heartbreak tune. It's like, baby, do you still love me? You got to tell me. I got to know.
Dylan, originally from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Of course, you mentioned Josh, originally from Queensland, Australia. How is Nashville for you guys? You've been there for a little bit, I guess, but, you know, is it cooperating?
Oh, man, we had a crash course.
Are you comfortable?
Yeah, we had a crash course, I think.
Definitely had a crash course.
But we went crazy together, and then, you know, we settled down, and now we have wives, and, you know, and I got a couple of kids now, and it's great being a family man. It's made me a better person. But Nashville, I got there 10 years ago when I was only, I guess it'll almost be 11 years now. So I got there when I was 19. So I moved straight out of the house to Nashville, and now I'm 30, and I've had a whole lot has happened in a decade. Probably not everything so family friendly, but we made it out. We made it out alive. And, you know, a lot of our buddies didn't. It's a crazy music scene. It's not for everybody. Nashville can swallow you up whole if you don't have a good plan and you don't have a head on your shoulders.
Yeah. And at least let's remind folks about these guys and the whiskey tasting that's coming up at the Black Velvet Lounge in River's Edge in Berryville.
Yeah. So you guys can see these folks tonight. Claire, like we said, is going to...
I think it's tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow yes. night. Yeah. Yeah, it's tomorrow night.
Don't come tonight.
I don't know what day it is. It's been a lot to put this
it's
together,
early.
But
yeah.
We're excited. So 7:30, we're going to kick off the guided whiskey tasting with Claire. So definitely come early and make sure you catch that. And then we're going to aim to start music around 8:30 or so, just kind of depending on the flow.
You have an opening act there?
We do. Yeah. So Odetta Hartman is a local musician as well.
She's
great. Splits her time between New York and upstate, I think, in Cochecton. And Odetta is amazing. So I definitely want to give her a shout out. Definitely make it in time to come see her. She's going to have a full band, which will be awesome. Cool. There'll be some banjos and fiddles, and so
nice.
It'll be really sweet. And then Josh is going to lead us into the rest of the evening. And hey, there's no noise ordinance, so we'll go for however long people will want to stick around. So,
all right. Where can folks get more information?
They can get more information at our Instagram profile, blackvelvetlounge_NY. There you can find the ticket link in our bio.
All right. We've been chatting with Elise Marie from the Black Velvet Lounge, Claire Marin from Catskill Provisions Distillery, and Dylan Smucker and Josh Rennie Hines, who will be performing tomorrow night there at the Black Velvet Lounge. You can check out their new single, The Way That It Does, wherever you get your music, I suppose, the Spotify, the YouTube.
That's right.
And you guys have any other personal social you want to get in there?
Oh, I'll just plug the social. You know, I'm Dylan Smucker on Instagram. You can look me up. I'm on the internet. If you just put in my name.
Same for me. Josh Rennie Hines, Instagram, all that.
Thanks for coming in today.
Yeah.
Claire, load up the whiskey.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about that. I got that.
All right. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you, man.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, a fire watch for the region in effect starting tomorrow at 7 until 6. And outdoor burning is prohibited in New York State. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union, and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, pairing up strangers to have conversations, not debates. Remind the country of the humanity in all of us. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.